Well, drummer Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers salute us today with their classic Crisis from 1961. Blakey is, of course, as I said, on drums, Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Curtis Fuller on trombone, Cedar Walton on piano, Jimmy Merritt on bass, and Freddie Hubbard on trumpet. This is from their 1962 album, Mosaic. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Hope you had a good weekend. Practically no one had a good weekend, given what is going on in Washington, D.C. But still, we carry on, because it's about to get dramatically worse. I wanted to follow up on some issues that we had been talking about. And the first thing I want to say about that is that it's at times like this that you realize how much we are not a part of this idea of democracy. We really are not, as citizens of the country, we really are not part of that discussion, except as targets. We're targeted with information. We're targeted with designs to get us to fulfill a predicted or predictable role. In this case, as both the Democrats and Republicans struggle over how to try to contain a wayward and apparently crooked president, we're still targets of plans, various plans as to how we should behave, what our particular role is in all of this. We have no role. That's the answer. We have no role. Right now, the Democrats are charged, or have charged themselves with the role of possibly prosecuting the president for breaking laws pertaining to a number of issues, a number of practices he's not supposed to engage in, including inviting foreign governments into the electoral affairs of the United States. And that's the principal charge that they're contemplating. So today and tomorrow will be heavy contemplation days. But in any event, as they report the news and what is happening, what is unfolding, giving us almost a blow-by-blow description, the one thing we should keep in mind is we are not really a part of this. We are observers, and we are, in fact, third-party observers at that. So we do not have a role. This is strictly the affairs of the House and the Senate. And they're fighting tooth and nail over all kinds of things, but principally, the operative assumption is that we, the people, have no role to play here. We might observe, and whatever information we have would be brought to us on an as-needed basis. That's the first curious thing about democracy. Now, here's where the people ought to be involved, directly involved in these matters. But the laws are written in such a way that is strictly prohibited. We are not involved. We are not to determine the truth. We are to make no judgments that may eventually lead to the prosecution of the President of the United States. We are merely to observe and to await filtered information as they see fit to disperse to us. The media also is in the same role, actually, but they have a little better vantage point in that they at least have an instrument, meaning the ability to disseminate news, or what they determine as news, culled from various sources and distilled, because they're not telling us the whole thing. They're not giving us the whole truth. So, in as much as we are sidelined, and by the way, this is according to, quote, law, unquote, the people have no part in this. No part at all. They'll tell us how it all works out. But until then, we just have to sit and wait, to hurry up and wait, as they used to say, and to shut up. This is the democratic process. Just thought I would reinforce that point. Because very often, especially in critical times, when there's a crisis, the people automatically assume, well, that we're all in it together. And we all ought to share in the information. No, 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 that's not how it works. And especially as it pertains to the possible removal of a president, we have no role to play. We are merely to observe quietly. We are to ask no questions. We are simply to go along with the process as designed, as scripted. To which I say, well, if that's the case, then let's do that. Since we have, we can't deny that this is not a democratic process. We can't deny that we are left to the side. When they get ready to tell us what they think we need to know, that's when we'll know. But even from the major media, and we know how partisan that is, we can't wholly and totally trust what is being disseminated as news or information. And we ought to remember that. So come to no conclusions, but do observe to the extent that we can observe, do observe the process. Observe it very carefully. Remember, this is actually the point that we could call it the highest points of the democratic society. And that phrase, freedom of information, all that has stopped. If you're under some misguided notion that you ought to know, better get a grip. It doesn't work that way. Democracy is not for everyone. In which case, we are also free, ironically, to look at the process with perhaps a more analytical view. What is this process telling us about the society that we're living in, and about the whole idea of not just democracy, but the whole idea of accountability, how far are we to go following our misguided notion that we are part of this process? And at some point, we should be holding people accountable, not to wait until, you know, election time. And then they tell us that our vote is accountability. We exercise accountability by voting about processes that are going on behind closed doors, reported by a compromised media, an uninformed media to some degree. But this is what we are supposed to celebrate as democracy. I just thought I would remind us all that as the process goes on, as we think we are involved, we better think twice. This is not to include us. We will be informed as to how it's turning out or how it has turned out. But until then, hurry up and wait. And in the meantime, also shut up. Because this is democracy at work. People are taking care of business. And that brings me to my first really important point, apart from the fact that we do have to observe the truth that there's no democracy in this whole process. That has been suspended. We don't get to enjoy that. But insofar as there's this heavy effort to compel the president out of office, allegedly for the commission of serious infractions, according to the law, and according to protocol, we should also keep in mind that the president isn't the only one who should go. I bet you didn't think about that. While they're deciding if the president should go, if he should be thrown out, none of that applies to them, the people who are deciding whether he should be thrown out. That, too, we have to wait to determine by our vote, the true democratic process. This is after much electioneering and campaigning and advertising to sway us one way or the other about candidates. That's when we come in. We come in after all the heavy artillery has been fired at us, and we vote. That's the democratic way. And I'm saying that right now, as the process has begun and they're telling us that legislators are hard at work doing their job, we have to remember that that is our job, to see to it that as they determine whether the president goes, we should by now have acquired enough information to decide who else goes, who else accompanies the president out the door. I have quite a few ideas about that, but I don't want to be prejudicial. This is how American democracy works. The elite of our, the political elite of our country will decide whether the president, the top person, gets the boot. There's no discussion as to who else gets the boot. For that, we have to wait until the system officially declares the electoral process in play. And even so, we have to wait and see how various contests unfold in various constituencies and who gets to be the top dog in different congressional districts and other districts. But we don't decide that either. We don't decide who becomes a candidate, for example. That's a different kind of democracy, and we have absolutely no access to, but we think we do. Let me just give you an example. It's been 3 years almost since Donald Trump has occupied the White House. Similarly, it's been 3 years since other people occupied offices in the Senate and in the House. What has happened in their district in the past 3 years? For example, as a way to measure their effectiveness in office. Let's take Nancy Pelosi as an example. She has been literally an authority unto herself, Speaker of the House, leader of the Democratic Party. That's very impressive. That's a lot of power and authority. But how do we gauge that power and authority? Well, to my mind, you gauge power and authority in the House and Senate by how their constituencies are doing or have been doing. I come back again to Pelosi in particular, but it applies to other so-called leaders too. 3 years. And what do we see in their districts? What is happening in Democratic districts all across the country, and especially those districts that are deemed to be economically, as they politely put it, disadvantaged? Have they done well in the last 3 years? Not only well, have they done better than well? Are you aware of major successes gained in the last 3 years for Democratic constituencies? as a result of full-fledged fighting, advocating. How have we fared as a society as a whole? Because of the strength of the Democratic Party in both houses of Congress. What were the major initiatives undertaken and won by the Democratic Party in the last 3 years? We are about to enter another 4-year cycle. And the primary goal of the Democratic Party right now is to crush the Republicans. But how have they fared? And how have we fared because they have been so spectacularly successful? I can't tell you that I'm aware of major victories that have been won in Democratic, heavily Democratic constituencies over the last 3 years. That means somebody's not doing their job, or they're not doing their job well. But you see, we got diverted. We got distracted. Our loyalty to the Democratic Party, the sympathy to the Democratic Party, precludes any criticism of the Democratic Party. We cannot criticize them because we will be seen as traitors and, weak-minded people. We should just trust that they know what to do and that they're doing their very best. It's no different from what Trump says. Trust me. I have witnessed the weakness of our political system, and especially the weakness of the Democratic Party, which is why people rushed to vote for me and put me in. So I'm just asking a simple question. If the attack on Trump has to do with his performance in office as a president, why do we make the exception for Democrats and Republicans, for that matter? We just accept what they hand us. But we should be asking the question now of the Democratic Party and its leadership in particular. Why shouldn't you accompany Donald Trump out the door? Why should you remain as a thorn in our side, even though we support you? Even though we go along with your substandard performance? Even though we don't call you out the way we should, give you a lot of elastic and you take advantage of it because our very self-worth has plummeted to such a point that we'll take anything if it's the Democrats. We are so starved for effective leadership that not only do we put up with incompetence, we practically endorse it automatically. Remember earlier this year when 800,000 workers were denied their paychecks because Donald Trump decided it was the appropriate punishment for people who did not, and their leadership, people who did not support his building of a wall. 800,000 people and their families. And things went along with only a little hiccup here and a little hiccup there. The Democrats did not organize against it in mass. Now, I was stunned. I still am stunned. They got their constituents to behave. Your paycheck was illegally taken away from you, summarily taken away from you. You had no other source of support. Let's say, well, Trump, the president, acting illegally, decided that he was going to do this. He was going to punish the workers, take money literally out of their and their children's mouths. Now, if ever there was a fighting issue, there it was. And this went on for weeks, more than a month. There were reports of people even committing suicide because things looked so bleak for them without their earned paychecks. This is the federal government. This is the president of the United States behaving like a thug, like a gangster, like a mafia don. I can do this to you and worse. Don't make me, because I'll do it. And the Democrats reported to their nice, wooden, beautiful offices, as usual. There was no fight in them. There was no fight. And it's not that the people didn't want to fight. The leadership didn't want to fight. The leadership didn't think that the time was right. Pelosi said to fight it would cause greater disruption. But so we'll have to work at this in another way. What she meant was it was going to cause disruption for her personally. She didn't have the guts to fight. And so she demanded that the party as a whole not fight. Holding endless news conferences, talking about how terrible it is that the president is acting this way. you are the leader of the opposition party. At least that's what I thought. And you allowed 800,000 workers to be denied their salary. You weren't denied your salary. And you are excusing the president's completely illegal conduct, which should have had people in the streets. Look around the globe and you see people understanding what democracy is supposed to be. Democracy is not the right of the state to injure me and my family, to do grievous harm to me and my family. That's not democracy. Ms. Pelosi says, because she has studied the matter very, very well, that Americans really, I mean, it's not the best of circumstances, to be sure, but have a little patience. Have a little courage, and we'll see if we can get this crazy president to suspend his craziness long enough to listen to reason, which he never did. The point I'm making, though, is that's not your job as a leader. Your job as a leader is not to give him room to do this kind of thing and even worse. Because you individually have determined that the people can't deal with it. They can't deal with the burden of fighting for their rights. So we had to wait for 3 years to pass with all these incidents in which the president has summarily violated so many rules of the Constitution, violated the people, because the leadership did not have the guts or did not see it as their obligation to be emphatic that there would be no negotiation with a crazy president and his minions who have done grievous harm to the people. I'm just citing this one example of 800,000 workers. That almost, I can't compute how people could know this is happening and not step up as leaders. So if there is to be a going out of office, I don't see that it should be uniquely applied to the president. But then this gets me into the other realm of the refusal of people to step up to the plate in their own interests. They too have abrogated their rights. They have done harm to themselves by not protecting their rights, won by tremendous sacrifice, in some cases, death for rights. They're very casual about it. Anybody, including Russians, and Ukrainians can violate your rights in this country with the help of a president. That's what it's come to. And we refuse to see the totality of the problem. This isn't just whether Donald Trump should be removed from office. This is about the leadership in the Democratic and Republican Party. I refer more so to the Democratic Party insofar as it is viewed as the People's Party. It isn't. We have people literally undermining the rights, conspiring to dilute the rights of their supposed supporters. And now the heavy emphasis on stealing our minds. We are so stupid. That's the thinking. We could easily be persuaded to act against our own interests. It seems to be working. Because the argument that the people should be making at this time, that the leaders argue and fight over whether the president should leave. But let us decide who else should go. They've already demonstrated why, repeatedly, they ought to go. Why can't we, or better still, why won't we make that happen? Why do we have so little interest in making that happen in the interest of democracy? I'll take a little break here, come back to your thoughts and comments right after the break at 888-874-4888. What's up? Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about who else needs to go and how do we get that done in the name of democracy. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see what you have to say. And you know, these are questions that should be ongoing. It's not about, well, you elect a person and they're guaranteed, at least, at the very least in Congress, 4 years of wide open, do whatever I want to do. And there's no price to pay. See, we want to remind them that there is a price to pay because we're watching you. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Leeds. Always a pleasure to hear you. I haven't been able to speak with you in about a year. And, of course, the society hasn't made much progress in the interim. You're raising important points, points we are all terrified to address. The actual situation is we don't have a political system that people take part in. It's designed so that people can't take part in it. And what used to be called in the 1950s hucksterism is now the standard behavior of virtually everyone in the country. I don't know if you're aware of it. You probably have heard of it. I won't use the word.
Oh, yes.
But BS is a euphemism for a certain word, and there has been for many years now a branch of legitimate philosophy called BS studies. And it began with a little book called On BS by a philosophy professor from Harvard. And he discusses the meaning of this word as it obtains in America. It's not the same as lying. It's you have heard of a BS artist, like a car salesman that can convince you to buy stuff you don't need. Americans respect that. Americans worship that, in fact. That is a kind of ideal for Americans, and it crosses all lines of gender and race. This is simply the case. What used to be called hucksterism as kind of a foreign concept is now the norm. And people accept the fact that the government is based on this concept of BS, and that's what interests them about it. It's entertainment. Now, if you since Americans are so deeply trained to follow orders and only follow the doings of power, palace intrigue as we're witnessing now, if the only way you could simulate anything like a democratic idea is, you would have to take, oh, say, abolish the U.S. Senate, increase the number of representatives for each state, and then the idea of accountability would be this. All matters of war and peace and all matters of budget are submitted to a plebiscite for vote by the population. Now, it would be cumbersome and people wouldn't like it, but you would actually have a wieldable form of democracy. A representative democracy, like most of the other institutions in this country, have proven themselves to be a failure. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked for a couple centuries. Now, this means that democracy is an idea you are going to have to insist on exercising yourself. No one can do it for you. So if giant corporations and banks have to submit their special pleas for privilege to the population regularly, they wouldn't be as powerful as they are. But the population has to accept the responsibility of doing this. Now, that means developing a kind of emotional maturity that Americans simply do not have, because that kind of emotional maturity has been intentionally withheld from them. They don't know anything about it. So the project is number one to
learn that. I'm listening to what you're saying, but I think we are debating slightly different points.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that there has been, at least I haven't seen it, but and I haven't seen reports of other people who might have seen the same idea. But the question to be raised, and it is to be raised at a strategic time, such as now. We're on the cusp of another national election. We just got through a national election that has given us these fantastic results. We should at least be discussing it as a possibility, as a priority in the populations that are so devastated by these kinds of decisions that people we put in power make. It is time, long past time, that we give some thought about this. Because we encourage people to believe they have a safe seat. They have safe power. We're not going to attack them. We're not going to hold them accountable. Because we can't. We don't have the power to do that. That's the thinking. And we accept that. Because there hasn't been much of a reaction to the dismal state of affairs in the halls of Congress and in state houses and in local city councils. We don't see people re-examining publicly the record of the people who are elected. They assume they have a reasonably good shot of being re-elected, and we give them that impression.
And obviously, the fault is with us, not them. Look, you have to, if you're an adult, you have to expect that there are people who are going to try to con you. If you play along with them, you're the dope. You're the problem. You see, the problem is us. And the entire system of education, politics, media, sports, all of it is to teach you that you have no responsibility in any of this. You're a passive bystander, and all you can do is ratify decisions that are already made in advance by the powerful. That's false. It obtains because people believe it. This goes back to the 1740s, and the philosopher David Hume, he talked about the paradox of government. He said, why is it that the many who are strong submit to the rule of the few who are weak? He said, there's only one way you can do it. You have to control what the many think. Now, this is long before mass media. It's done through the institutions we worship, the things we take part in every day. Your job is a fascist command structure. You do what you're told or you're out. There's no such thing as democracy in your work life. This is where you have to start. The politics is just a reflection of the fascism you live every day and accept. This is the problem. We are the only ones that can change it. Of course, there are no politicians saying anything against Trump. They're all bought off. They're all tools of the rich, and their job is to make sure the rich stay where they are at your expense. Now, the system makes perfect sense at all times when you view it accurately, when you understand what its goal is. If you think there's supposed to be some kind of democracy going on here, you're going to scratch your head until your fingers touch your brain. It won't, because that's not what it is. This is a spectacle for idiots. They expect you to be idiots, and we comply. The problem is our compliance, not the people who are trying to manipulate us. There will always be people like that. You have to be smart enough not to play along.
So,
agreed?
Let's look at the situation as it is. What would you recommend people do if they're interested in changing the situation, the power equation? What should people consider doing?
Let's take a look around the world. Perhaps we can learn something from other people. Let's take a look. In Chile right now, who's the most afraid, the people or the government? The government is afraid there. The military is afraid there. That's because the people called a general strike, and even after they got their initial goals, they decided, let's get rid of all this austerity. That's why it's unreportable in the United States. That's the project we should be about. It's not rocket science. It's not that you need some kind of deep strategy and subtle tactics. It's perfectly out in the open. People just have to, what they have to do is the hardest thing for them now, because they're so indoctrinated, they have to stop paying attention to sports, celebrity hairdos, and nonsense, and sitting in rapt attention waiting for the next item in the news cycle to tell them what's important, and try to figure out what's important right in front of their faces. This is not difficult.
We have to leave it there for today. I'm sorry, we're out of time. But it was great listening to you and your ideas. And I hope there was an impact felt in the larger listener pool. We'll know when we reconvene and see how you impacted their thinking. Thanks so much for calling. Thanks so much for listening. We join each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.